Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. This hour is presented by Mainstay Financial and Anna Lee Leonard, who is responsible for the information and opinions expressed during the show.
Hi, this is Financial Advisor of the Year, Jim Brogan of Knoxville, Tennessee. You're listening to Winning with my good friend and colleague, Anna Lee Leonard.
You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee. Anna Lee is a retirement and estate planner, a member of the Ed Slott Master Elite IRA Advisor Group, as well as a sought-after speaker on such topics as income planning, 401k rollovers, and advanced IRA reduction strategies. When not working in her private practice, Anna Lee joins with other certified senior advisors to promote top-quality services to mature adults in the Pensacola area. Her goal is to help you prepare for and live comfortably in retirement. You can reach her office at 437-3127 or online at mainstaypensacola.com or call her now at 437-1620 on Winning with Anna Lee.
Welcome to the Pensacola Expert Panel. My name is Ruthie C. You're listening to Winning with Anna Lee and Mainstay Financials. I'm joined by Mr. Bob Burgi this morning. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you, Ruthie C.?
I am doing very well. I'm so happy to see you this morning. How are you post-Sally? How are things?
I'm good. Everything came out okay. How about you?
All good. Blessed and grateful. We had no major issues.
Yeah, just a lot of cleaning up all over town.
Yes, lots of cleanup. And as we were just discussing with Mike Wiggins on the garden line, you know, there's plenty to do to restore your yard. And I imagine so, for some people that also will impact their finances as well.
Right. Fortunately, we're, I guess, kind of coming into that dormant time where you don't have to worry as much about your yard or, you know, the foliage. I don't know. I'm sure he had some good things to say. Love, Mike.
Yes, absolutely. Good tips. And mostly, yeah, I got to clean up so it can all go to sleep.
Right on. So, okay. Today, of course, we're missing somebody. And she, Anna Lee, that is, she is in Helen, Georgia at Oktoberfest. That is what I understand.
Fun.
Yes.
That sounds like a great time.
I know. And she is taking a well-deserved break, vacation, you know, getting a little R&R. And I'll bet maybe some red wine is involved.
I certainly hope so. I hope she's having a great time.
Right. Okay. So first thing we want to do, we want to start out with a, what do we call this? A question, just something to get people thinking, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What we came up with is, what are the most expensive, how do we say this? What are the most expensive cities to buy a home in?
Oh,
in the United States.
That's okay. A good one.
Yes. Okay. Well, you're on the hot seat.
This is it. Oh gosh. Right off the bat, I would think San Francisco.
Number two.
Is number two.
Right.
How about New York?
Number one.
That's number
one. Wow, you've done well.
So that's why I do not live there.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little shocked. There is no city in the Southeast United States, which is great.
Really?
Great for us, right? Not even Nashville, Atlanta. So, you know, that's terrific. The concentration is mostly on the East Coast, specifically New England. And the Northeast, let's call, you know, New York City is not New England, but you have Boston and you have some other cities up there that are very, very expensive. And the West Coast, mostly California. I think you have five cities in California and one, what's the other one? Oh, Seattle and also Denver, Colorado. And I'm sure my two children that live out there appreciate that. But, anyway, we wanted to start out with that and just kind of get you thinking about that. Ruthie, you killed it. That's very impressive.
Hey, I'm glad I've been paying some attention to some of those business newsletters that come through. And I think we've had a good prompt this morning, Bob, because we have a question on the phones from Jeff in Pensacola.
About what? We haven't even introduced our topic yet.
Jeff, tell us what you're thinking.
Well, what I'm thinking is, are there still mutual funds that you can anticipate a 6% return on an annual basis?
anticipate a 6% annual return, that's difficult. The only way you're going to approach that, and you're not going to get that every year, is to invest in equity funds, of course, or funds. You're not going to get a 6% return in anything that any of us, you and I, anybody anywhere would consider safe. Not with today's interest rate environment and what fixed income instruments are paying. So 6% long term, I would think that you could expect that in an all equity fund or other funds that are that don't have that conservative fixed income component. But over time, you know, you're going to have years where you lose money. You're going to have years where you make a lot more than 6%. But over time, yeah, I think a good equity fund should return 6% over time.
Can you explain an equity fund?
Equity fund, that's stocks. A fund that invests in stocks.
Sure.
And, you know, in this show and I think in other shows and certainly, you know, the folks that are, you know, talking investments, we sort of use equities and stocks interchangeably, but they are in fact one and the same.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thanks for calling.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for calling in. And then we also have another question going back to our conversation about the expensive cities.
Oh, wow.
So someone says, wouldn't Miami be on the list in the Southeast?
Let's see. Is Miami on the list? No. But it says it's got a drop. This is the top 10. Miami is actually number 11.
Oh, just missed it.
Yes, yes. And I could go over the top 10, but again, it's New York City, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Boston, Seattle. And then you've got in the top 10 San Jose, which is, you know, I think the San Jose MSA includes Silicon Valley, and I'm sure prices have jumped there as well. But I think five of the cities are in California, a couple in the Northeast, and then Seattle and Denver. So,
There's Denver. I knew that one had to be on the list somewhere. It's growing so quickly.
Right. I have two children that live there, and they're cringing right now because I have a way of mentioning that often.
Oh.
You know, trying to get them back home.
Just working that into the conversation.
Right. That's right. That's right. Anyway, so today's topic is federal estate taxes, really estate taxes in general. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about wealth transfer taxes. I enjoy taxes. That's something that is near and dear to my heart. I enjoy investments. I enjoy everything we do at Mainstay. However, I have a particular affinity to wealth transfer taxes, estate taxes in particular. And as I often say, and you've heard me say this, Ruthie, you know, it's not what you make, it's what you get to keep and pass on to the folks you love, the causes you believe in. And, you know, you can make a lot of money, you can have great returns, but if you don't get to keep that money, you know, what's the point? So federal estate taxes, you know, there's, Ruthie, we were talking about this before the show. I believe it was Mark Twain that had the quote, "The best way to predict the future is to study the past, study past behavior, and, you know, obviously know where you've been." So in discussing estate taxes today, I think it's important to know where we've been. And as recently, and I say recently, you know, Ruthie, you haven't been alive much longer than this period of time, but as recently as 20 years ago, actually about 21, 22 years ago, the federal estate tax exemption was $600,000. $600,000, that means any estate over $600,000 was paying a federal estate tax. That's a pretty low number. from that point, and I think it was actually 1998, it went to 625, it went up to 650, 675, it went to a million, 2 million, went up, up, up. I think in 2005, it was, if memory serves, I know in 2010, it went away for 1 year. It went away for 1 year in 2010. That was the year the federal estate tax exemption was unlimited. There was no federal estate tax. That was the year George Steinbrenner died. And this gentleman, with hundreds of millions of dollars, the entire estate passed tax-free. I believe there's a New York state death tax, but there was no federal estate tax on Mr. Steinbrenner's estate. But in I mentioned 2005, it was 1.5 million. 2010, it went away. 2015, it was up to five and a half million. And in 2020, you can pass along, your estate can have $11.6 million in it before it is taxed. So, Ruthie, from about the year 2000, probably 1999, until 2020, the federal estate tax exemption, the allowance, how much you can pass tax-free, has increased 20 times. That's amazing.
That's incredible.
That is absolutely amazing. And I should mention this. For 11 years, before it went up from 600,000, it was at 600,000. So it didn't slowly go up in the years preceding that year that it went up from 600 to 625. It was at 600,000 for, I believe it was 11 consecutive years. And then it went up, up, up. So for all intents and purposes, most of us have no concerns where a federal estate tax is concerned. In fact, only 0.2% of all estates will pay a federal estate tax in 2020. That's a very low number. So why are we talking about it? Well, we've gotten ourselves into a mess, right? We have stimulus checks going out. There's been all sorts of, I'm not going to call it fiscal irresponsibility, but possibly fiscal necessities with COVID and a lot of things that have happened. We've overspent. And, you know, in terms of a tax that, you know, I would consider, and I think most in Congress would consider low-hanging fruit, the federal estate tax really has no, doesn't hurt anybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Somebody passes away, the kids, maybe somebody else is the beneficiary of the estate, and you don't see them, you know, really upset about anything because, that's what we call a windfall. However, going forward, I think that, the federal estate tax exemption is going to go down, and it's going to go down considerably. So I think it's, and what we've just done, we've kind of gone back to see where we've been as recently as the late 90s at 600,000, the federal estate tax exemption. By the way, the highest federal estate tax rate during that time was 55%. 55%, that is the most punitive, confiscatory tax in our system. It is, it's what we called at one time a wealth redistribution system. The wealthy pay, the wealthy estates pay the federal estate tax, and, you know, that money flows back out, you know, to different causes and but right now at $11.6 million federal estate tax exemption, few are concerned about it, but we do believe that is going to change. Ruthie, did we have a question?
We do. Yes, we had a question come in, and it is about probate. So if something is not included in probate, does it avoid estate taxes?
Okay. Probate, and this is something that is often confused. A lot of people, a lot of our clients will confuse the fact that something avoids probate and therefore is not included in their taxable estate. They are two different things. Again, with an $11.6 million federal estate tax exemption, it probably doesn't matter. But an asset that avoids probate does not avoid estate tax being included in a taxable estate. Those are two completely different things. However, avoiding probate is typically a good thing. And there's a couple of ways to do that. And maybe our listener knows this, but I'll go into this a little bit. First and foremost, by titling, you can avoid probate by having a joint owner, joint with right of survivorship. You can avoid probate by title, by titling something transferable on death, or what we call TOD, or payable on death, POD, to a beneficiary. And nothing defeats title. If you have a joint owner or TOD or POD to a beneficiary, nothing defeats that, and it does escape probate. Other things that escape probate is having a primary beneficiary designation. For example, an annuity, certainly any IRA, any Roth, 401k, life insurance policy, there's a beneficiary designation. Those assets avoid probate. And then there's also trusts. You can have all of your money or whatever portion you choose to have placed in your trust, and anything that passes by trust also avoids probate. But back to the original question, avoiding probate and avoiding federal estate taxes, two completely different things. But great question. And if there are any other questions, please call us at 850-437-1620. That's 1620. Continuing, I've got we live in a very friendly state where taxes are concerned. Here in Florida, obviously, we pay no income taxes, but we should also be proud of the fact that we have no estate taxes, no state death taxes, no inheritance taxes. And, you know, that's nice because a lot of states do. As a matter of fact, several states do. And if you look at, we go back to the Northeast, a lot of them are concentrated in the Northeast United States. So you start hitting the tax unfriendly states as you get up to New England and the Northeast. And I don't know why that is, but that is a fact. The other thing we wanted to discuss is how do you, with the federal estate tax, and I think every expert in this area, a lot of tax experts, a lot of economists feel that the federal estate tax exemption will come down and several more estates will become taxable. So if this happens, what sort of things can you do to avoid paying federal estate taxes? And let's say it settles in at a couple million dollars, let's say it's $2 million, $3 million, and I believe that day is coming. Everything that you own is included in your taxable estate. That includes the death benefit of life insurance proceeds. Now, you never enjoyed the death benefit, but you owned the policy. And since you owned the policy and you controlled who the beneficiary was, and you chose to pay those premiums, the death benefit, and that can be a lot of money, is included in your taxable estate. One way to avoid that is to set up what is known as an irrevocable life insurance trust. If you don't own it, it's not included in your taxable estate. And you make an irrevocable election to transfer that policy and to have the premiums paid from the policy. And there's a little more to it than that. But if you don't own it, it's not included in your taxable estate. Other things you can do, gifting, annual gifting to your kids or to whoever, you can do that. And if you have several recipients of those gifts as the donor, if you have several recipients, you can get a lot done if you develop a pattern of doing that annually. Charitable contributions, another way, and then there are several other sophisticated ways to transfer assets, including family limited partnerships and qualified personal residence trusts. We will not go into those at all today. One of the things I like sharing, and Annalee has taught me how to do this, and it's always a good thing to do, is have a story. And I have a story that involves my dad. And, you know, this is a conversation I had with him probably 30 years ago. And I was, I was doing a lot of estate planning. I was doing a lot of trust work and dealing with, 30 years ago, a $600,000 exemption and how to avoid paying federal estate taxes with that small an exemption. Anyway, my father, smart guy, I sit down with him and I'm all excited to tell him about federal estate taxes. And I tell him, Dad, you know you have a $600,000 federal estate tax exemption when you die. And I had to explain that, and that means, you know, anything over $600,000 when you die is going to be taxed, and it's going to be taxed mightily. And as I said, the highest marginal rate is 55%, and there is no low rate on federal estate taxes. He says, and this is really important because I think this is the way a lot of people think. He says to me, you're telling me that all this money that I have earned and worked so hard for my whole life, and I paid taxes on it, and then I took that money, I reinvested it, and I paid taxes on the dividends, capital gains, the interest. You're telling me that when I die, there's another tax on it? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, no way. And I said, way.
Way.
back when we used to say that, right? And you know the irony is, of course, you know, you're always your parent's child, and he's just like, you know, you've got to be wrong, you know, there's just no way. And so, well, that is the way it was, and that's the way it is now. However, the exemption is much higher, but I think we can all count on that coming down. And I think, you know, we're going to hear a lot more about federal estate taxes going forward than we have probably in the last 8 years. Anyway, Ruthie, do we have another caller?
We do. We have a quick question before we get to the news. So are estate taxes and inheritance taxes the same?
Okay, that's a terrific question. And I will start to address that. However, we may be interrupted by a commercial. Two completely different things, but both involving the death of the owner of the assets. So, an estate tax is pretty much what we've been talking about during the first half of this show. An estate tax is levied on the estate, and it includes all of the assets that the deceased owned at the time of their death, less liabilities. So that and the tax itself is levied on the estate. So the estate pays the estate tax. And you can almost guess what an inheritance tax is. An inheritance tax is a tax that the beneficiaries pay, or beneficiary pays, when they receive those very same assets. So it is a tax that is owed by the beneficiary once they receive the assets from the estate of the decedent. And that might be a little bit hard to follow, but it's almost like you're taxed on both sides of within the estate and also when the assets pass to the beneficiaries. I think it's time for a commercial.
It is just about, and so just to make sure, we'll go to Mark for the news, and we will come back with Winning with Anna Lee and Bob in just a couple of moments. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel. We will be right back.
Time's running out to apply for Escambia Cares funding. We'll have the story and the deadline after Fox News.
I'm Chris Foster. President Trump and Joe Biden will be on stage tonight in Cleveland for the first debate of the campaign.
Fox's Chris Wallace will moderate, and he has said he will not be fact-checking. The matchup will be held under strict coronavirus protocols. Guests are limited, and all will be tested. There will be no handshake between the candidates. Neither will wear a mask on stage.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland. A recording of a grand jury discussing evidence in a police shooting is being made public.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron is set to release grand jury recordings from last week's deliberations in the Breonna Taylor case, complying with an order issued Monday by a Jefferson County Circuit judge, and after a juror in the case filed a motion for release, claiming state prosecutors misrepresented the grand jury's deliberations.
Fox's Jeff Manasso. No police officers were charged with Breonna Taylor's death during a drug raid in March. One was charged for firing shots into a neighboring apartment. America's listening to Fox News.
It's 10:31 at News Radio 98.92.3, AM 1620. It's 67 and cloudy. Good morning. I'm Mark Jacobs. Application period closes tonight for Escambia Cares Family Emergency Financial Assistance Grants. Those applications being accepted online at myescambia.com/cares, as well as several physical locations around the county. We've got those locations on our Facebook page. Escambia County has allocated more than $3.5 million of CARES Act funding to provide grants of $2,000 each to families who have been impacted by COVID-19 and need assistance. The ECUA may be running behind schedule by a day or so this week because of increased collections due to Hurricane Sally. In Escambia County, they say all the collections should be finished up by Saturday. In Santa Rosa County, they should be caught up by tomorrow and Saturday as well. If a collection has not been done within that time frame, customers aren't asked to contact ECUA customer service. Now the WEAR weather forecast.
Highs only into the lower 70s, 70 through 73 degrees is the range. Isolated chance of showers early on. Clouds should clear up, and the overnight lows the next couple of mornings, low to mid 50s with very little to speak of in terms of 80s as we finish out the work week. For now, though, AM meteorologist Joseph Neubauer reporting in the Channel 3 First Warning Weather Center.
67 in Pensacola and Milton, 68 in Gulf Breeze at 10:33. Our next news at 11 with breaking news anytime. I'm Mark Jacobs, News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.
I'm Jennifer Kashinka with your Money Now. Stocks are lower. The Dow Industrials down 152 at 27,431. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 both down 12. Oxford Economics says GDP data will reveal record-breaking growth rates for many economies over the summer, but there are clear signs the recovery in the fall will be markedly weaker. Rising cases of COVID-19 have prompted a retightening of distancing rules in some areas, but Oxford expects the hit to activity to be much smaller than in March and April. Recent events may lead firms, though, to determine that further cost-cutting measures and redundancies will need to survive. Amazon's latest effort to speed up shopping trips lets you pay with the palm of your hand. The company has introduced Amazon One, which connects your palm print to a stored credit card so you can place your hand above a sensor to enter and buy items at checkout free Amazon Go stores. Initially, the feature will be available just in Seattle. That's your money now.
Reliance Aerotech Services has created a clean approach to public safety. The Reliance Aerotech Services team has developed a remotely automated disinfection process which envelops the entire treatment area with a hospital-grade disinfection solution to help you get back to work faster. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel this Wednesday at 10:30 to learn how this procedure could be the perfect solution for your office, restaurant, boat, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This is Davis Allen, Program Director of News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We've teamed up with our sister station, Cat Country 98.7, as well as WEAR Channel 3 and the United Way of West Florida to raise money for a relief fund to help victims of Hurricane Sally in the Florida Panhandle. All day tomorrow, you can drop off your donations curbside at Cordova Mall near Best Buy, or you can text 850-RELIEF to 41444. We're local, and we live here too. News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.
Now, more of the Pensacola Expert Panel with Ruthie C. on News Radio 92.3, AM 1620.
Welcome back to the Pensacola Expert Panel. My name is Ruthie C. I'm speaking with Mr. Bob Burgie of Mainstay Financials, and we are so excited to have you with us this morning. We are talking about inheritance tax and estate tax and how things are probably going to change here in the future.
They are. I can say that. I can say that confidently, and I think, well, I know Anna Lee would agree with that. But the reason is, and, you know, I try to say this the right way, but it's tough to say the right way. We've just been spending way too much. And, you know, our taxes are going up. They have just got to go up. And I don't want to, I can't imagine there's anybody out there that disagrees. And I do believe. And when I say the exemption is going down, that's a very bad thing. You know, that's a bad thing. You know, the exemption, the allowance going down, that means your taxes are going up. And in terms of the wealth transfer tax and specifically the federal estate tax, Ruthie, you were talking to me during the break about your family's is, you know, if you want to share a little bit about that, that'll give me a great chance to reply like I need to. Go ahead and deliver your dilemma.
Sure. So I was sharing with Bob that my family, we are really, really fortunate to have some very cool old properties in Canada, up in Ontario. And so within my family, I was saying I'm the sixth generation. So we have lots of people involved. We have an association. We have shares. People pay per share, that type of thing. And none of us is a Canadian citizen. So the foreign inheritance tax is something that I hear about pretty much every year when we do our annual meeting.
Right. And so Ruthie took the time to ask me about this during the break. And the answer I gave her, and the answer I need, and what I need to say to everyone, all of our listeners, if you have an issue like this, or even an estate planning issue, an estate tax issue, please, please, please consult with your attorney, consult with your tax advisor. You know, you're not going to resolve any of these issues by listening to me or anyone else. Your issues are so specific, just like Ruthie C's and her family's, and you need the advice and the counsel of a professional. And in this case, you know, you may be able to find an attorney stateside that is also well-versed in Canadian law, but, you know, I don't know any. We know a lot of very capable estate planning attorneys and CPAs and tax experts here in town, and we work very closely with them. That one, I can't even begin to direct you to anyone.
I'm in the wrong part of the world for a Canadian
attorney.
Yeah,
you need to be in Michigan or, you know, where is the property, if you don't mind me asking?
Sure, it's about 100 miles north of Toronto.
Okay. When I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, we used to go to a place called Havelock, Canada.
So beautiful.
Okay.
Just
and
so beautiful.
Peterborough, and there's just enormous rocks, beautiful lakes, crystal clear. The alarming thing about up there, and we went up there in summer for many, many years, specifically to an area called Havelock. The deer flies are enormous.
Yes.
The mosquitoes, it is unbelievable. The insects and the size of them. And I mean, they were just everywhere. I couldn't believe it.
They joke that it's the country's bird.
Yeah.
You know what we would call the state bird?
Yeah,
the country's bird.
Is the deer fly bird. Or the mosquito. Yes, yes.
Yeah. Those other ones. You got to jump in the lake to avoid those guys. We actually have another question coming in,
in the
same vein of thought, is how do you deal with setting up a trust across state lines? That might be a little easier.
Okay. Wherever you are domiciled, wherever your home is, okay, and domicile is a very, where are you spending most of your time? Where are you registered to vote? What does your driver's license say? That is, where's your property homesteaded? And if it's here in Florida, great. If you're in Alabama, how to set up a trust, you want Alabama laws to govern. We're so close to the Alabama border. Whenever somebody says across state lines, I assume it's a Florida-Alabama thing and they own property in both states. But wherever you're domiciled is what you want the controlling law to be in your trust. And, of course, you probably want to use an Alabama – you do want to use an Alabama attorney. And in most cases, a estate or trust wills and estate planning board certified attorney. But how you set it up, you need to find an attorney, a capable attorney, to set it up. I hope I answered that question. If you have any other questions, please, 850-437-1620. Real quickly, I'd like to, we talked about, one of the callers asked about the difference between estate taxes and inheritance taxes, and I explained that as the estate taxes being taxed to the estate pays the estate tax, and with inheritance taxes, the beneficiaries, whoever received the property, pay the inheritance tax, and that's pretty simple. So there is no federal inheritance tax. There is a federal estate tax. Hmm. But on the state level, very, very interesting. Of course, in Florida, we have no estate tax. We have no inheritance tax. Actually, there is no estate or inheritance tax in Alabama. But we have a number of states that do have a state estate tax. And so that it doesn't sound redundant, they don't call it a state estate tax. They typically call it a state death tax. And, there's several states that have it. I won't go into them, but suffice it to say there are no states in the Southeast United States that have a state death tax. They're mostly, as I said, in the Northeast and out West. That's what it looks like to me. There's 15 of them. There are a couple of states that have an inheritance tax. And an inheritance tax, again, is the tax that is paid by the beneficiary when they receive the property. The states that have an inheritance tax are Kentucky, Maryland, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Iowa. Only, what is that, 5 states. Not bad. So in most cases, you don't need to worry about an inheritance tax. Now, the one state where you pay an inheritance tax and an estate tax at the state level is the state of Maryland. So not a very tax-friendly state over there in Maryland. So one of the other things I wanted to cover is we have I was talking to my daughter, the one that lives in Denver, I believe last night, and she sent me this link to the 10 facts you should know about the federal estate tax. Somehow I've missed this article, but it's by the Center on Budget and Policy, and very good federal estate tax facts. The first fact is what I mentioned at the top of the show. Only 2 out of every 1,000 estates will pay the federal estate tax right now. That's because of the high exemption. But that is 0.2%. And of course, that's a small number. But as we've said over and over, that is coming down, and more estates will be subject to the federal estate tax. I'm not gonna go over all 10, but there another type of estate or another asset in an estate that typically will avoid federal estate taxes is agricultural property, farm property. And Ruth, you see, I don't know if yours is considered agricultural, but you know, that's Canada. I have no idea what their laws are. But this is an alarming statistic in a good way. There were only 80 small farms or businesses that paid an estate tax in 2019. Only 80.
Wow.
In the country.
Okay.
That's amazing. And we're not going to get into that, but there is an enormous benefit to having a farm, agricultural property, and sometimes even a business in avoiding federal estate taxes. I do remember a case not many years ago, but the Robbie family in Miami. The Robbie family owned the Miami Dolphins. They owned the stadium. And there was a concentration of wealth in the sports franchise and the stadium. In order to pay the federal estate tax, they had to sell one. Mm. And I actually think, and I may be wrong and I should get my facts straight, but I think they sold either the stadium or the franchise. I can't remember which one, but I remember it was a long time ago and one of those things had to happen. And of course, now there are measures in place to avoid that, having to sell a going concern that has been in the family forever. But when you have a concentration of wealth in one or two assets, it makes it very difficult to generate the liquidity to pay the federal estate taxes. Because, you know, the federal government, the Department of Revenue, isn't going to take partial ownership of a sports franchise as payment in full of the federal estate taxes.
Sure.
But anyway, the other thing I think we should mention is I think a lot of people are familiar with the step-up in basis that you receive at death. And you've probably heard that term. It's a very simple simple measure that when somebody passes away, the assets in their estate receive what is known as a step-up in cost basis. That means the beneficiaries receive the property with a cost basis equal to the date of death value of that asset, or the alternative date of death value, which is 6 months later. And that measure was added because sometimes there's big swings in property values, especially in the stock market, as we've seen this year. And so you can choose the alternate date of death valuation, which is 6 months following the date of death. But there's a lot of discussion now that the step up in basis, which has been in place for 40 years, may go away. And all capital gains that have been, you know, during your entire lifetime, Ruth, you see, and most of my lifetime, that have been wiped out at death, will carry over. The carryover in cost basis will be reintroduced, or some version thereof, or possibly a version of a carryover in cost basis for particular assets. But that is something that is, you know, certainly will be on the table in 2021. Go ahead. We have a caller.
We do. Well, we have a text that came in, jumping back for just a second to the question about setting up a trust across the state lines. Mm-hmm. This, I think, could be so relevant to lots of people in this area. This person says, I'm a Florida resident, but the Navy sends me all over.
Right.
The bulk is in Louisiana with Napoleon code. So,
okay. anybody mentions the state of Louisiana and the Napoleonic Code is, I mean, it's different. I didn't go to law school in Louisiana, but anytime anything came up in Louisiana when I was in law school, it was, we just kind of, you know, waved our hand and said, well, that's Louisiana, you know. So it's a very unusual system, especially when it comes to property rights. And I, you know, listen, I don't know much about Napoleonic law, but if this person is from Louisiana, is domiciled in Louisiana, calls Louisiana their home, let's, you know, if that's where you're registered to vote, by all means, have the trust established in the state of Louisiana. If you are in, if you are serving our country, and thank you for your service, go visit your JAG Corps attorney that drafts wills. I don't know if they draft trusts in the JAG Corps. That may or may not be something they do, but they can certainly advise you on that. But there's somebody here at this base, I know, that serves in the JAG Corps that does the estate planning, and there's certainly more than one, and you know, they would have a much better answer for you than me. Again, consult with your attorney, consult with your tax advisor, and they, you know, they will serve you well. But for anyone dealing with Louisiana, you know, use a Louisiana attorney.
So if it's Louisiana, you need a Louisiana lawyer. If it's Canada, you need a Canadian.
I can answer most things outside of Louisiana and Canada. You know, how about this? In the other 49 states.
There we go. Yeah, so these are just the only two.
And you know, and Annalise from Louisiana, so she knows what I'm talking about. You know, I don't know how many times I've asked, what county are we in when we go through that? Well, they're not counties, they're parishes.
It's a parish.
That's right. Yes. That's right. That's right. But anyway, great question. And listen, if you'd like to set up an appointment with me or Annalie or both of us, please call the office at 850-437-3127. And Kristen will be happy to set up an appointment. We can, you know, these days we can do it in person, we can do it by Zoom, we can do it over the telephone, but you know, please feel free to call and set up an appointment. And again, the number is 850-437-3127. All right. So we were going over the, you know, the 10 facts you should know about the federal estate tax, and we've gone through a few. I think the you know, the other two that I think I'd like to hit on is that the federal estate tax is a significant revenue source. And even though only two-tenths of 1% of estates are taxable, it still generated last year almost $300 billion in revenue. And the next thing, and I love this one, it says compliance costs are modest. This is another federal estate tax fact. And what this means is the cost of policing this, the cost of having these large estates cough up what they owe, only amounts to only 7% of the total revenue generated. So that's a very nice return on investment. You know, you put 7% of the revenue proceeds into making sure that it's paid. That's you know, and then, you know, you've got, so what is it? Of the $300 billion, you're spending 7% of that. Gosh, that's a lot of money. $21 billion to get the $300 billion. Anyway, I don't know the exact numbers, but it says 7% is the cost of compliance. One of the other points made of the federal estate tax facts. It is considered the most progressive tax in the U.S. tax code, meaning progressive. What does that mean? What do you think that means, Ruthie?
Oh, I would imagine that means on the liberal side.
Yeah, it is, but it is often called a wealth redistribution system. And that is, you know, these people that have done so well, and let's face it, they've done so well because they've been able to operate this business or make all this money in this great country. And, you know, we embrace capitalism. But at death, you know, if you've done exceedingly well, and in 2020, if you've made over how much? 11.6 million. If you die with over 11, if you've accumulated over $11.6 million, you know, the policy decision has been made in this country that you're going to give some back. And it, again, it's called the most progressive tax in our U.S. tax code. And I would agree with that. I would agree with that. It is a property tax levied at death, and you are punished, or your beneficiaries are punished proportionately as to how much how well you did or how successful you were financially. But I think it's necessary. A lot of people wouldn't want to hear that, but it is necessary. And of course, at this point in time, it's only the only victims are those that have done exceedingly well. But I like that. I like that a lot. It's a progressive tax. It's something we need, and I think it's something that we can expect to go down. The exemption, that is. Meaning that the estate tax revenue is going to be going up over time. Certainly, we think in 2021 there will be more attention placed on taxing wealth as it transfers from one generation to the next. And guess who has probably, well, certainly the most progressive tax in this hemisphere. And how about in North America?
Oh, in North America. Would it be California with all the
No. I'm talking about country.
Oh, a country. Oh, Canada.
Canada. Yeah. Universal health care, you know, socialized. It's very progressive. When I lived in Cleveland, we had a lot of Canadian clients, and the taxes they paid, unbelievable. But they never worried about health care. I remember in Canada, none of the clients were able to deduct their mortgage interest. And I remember one of them saying, you know what? You don't miss what you never had. You know, they didn't know any different. You know, they all had mortgages, but they were never allowed to deduct the interest. I also did some reading on estate taxes, you know, death taxes, and Canada's very, very confiscatory. So you pay your taxes, you pay your fair share of taxes. So that's something you and your family or other shareholders have to look forward to as the shares of the property in where in Northern Ontario.
Yes.
Yeah. As that changes hands, but you know. Consult with somebody, and you'll get much better and more definitive answers than I could ever provide.
Well, I know I have a lot better questions now.
Yeah. So we have a debate this evening.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Word on the street.
Are you tuning in?
You know, I'm going to go work out.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week.
Thanks so much, Barb.
I think to myself, what a wonderful